U.S. tech giants are under the microscope in a Russian court today. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Facebook, Twitter, and Google are accused of failing to delete posts urging children to take part in illegal protests in Russia. Each one of the U.S. tech titans faces three separate cases in a Russian court today. It comes after protests across the country in January against a separate court ruling to send the government's fiercest critic, opposition leader Alexei Navalny, to prison. The BBC's Sarah Rainsford has more on that story from Moscow.
It's all very directly linked to a series of street protests that took place in January in support of the opposition politician Alexei Navalny. Ahead of them, there was a lot of social media activity, of course, Mr. Navalny's team using social media platforms to call people to the protests. Now, those protests were not authorized by the authorities, and so these calls to take part in the protests were also deemed illegal, and particularly because the authorities decided that they were specifically targeting under 18s. That's another offense here. So Twitter, Facebook, Google currently are facing potentially fairly significant fines for allegedly allowing their platforms to be used to call young Russians to take part in these illegal protests and for refusing to delete content that specifically did that. There could be fines of up to $50,000 for each case being brought by Russia's media monitor, its watchdog here.
So clearly a very politically charged environment there in Russia, but it seems these fines really aren't that hefty when you consider how much money these tech giants make.
Well, sure, the money is not huge, but there are lots and lots of companies in the firing line, if you like, at the moment, including Russian companies too. So VKontakte, VK, the Russian sort of equivalent of Facebook, was fined back in March, again, in connection with these protests. Odnoklassniki, which is another very big platform here, that was fined too. And Twitter itself is also at the heart of another storm, really a fight with the Russian authorities over what the Russian watchdog here is saying is its refusal to delete content, which it claims is promoting suicide and drug use and even child porn. Now, Twitter has denied that absolutely, saying there's zero tolerance to all of those things on its platforms and says it's deeply concerned instead by what it calls an attempt to throttle the online public conversation. But of course, you may remember that Twitter is facing a slowdown at the moment, and there is a threat, in fact, to ban and bar Twitter altogether in the middle of this month if it doesn't remove the content that the Russian watchdog is saying it needs removing.
The BBC's Sarah Rainsford for us in Moscow. Thanks so much for breaking this down for us.
Thank you.
Well, as Sarah explained there, it's not just U.S. tech firms caught up in the controversy. China's TikTok and Telegram are also facing charges. Checking the numbers now, stocks across Asia capped today's session in the green. The Shanghai Composite Index closed up 0.5%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng and Tokyo's Nikkei each gained 1.5% and 1.9%, respectively. Here in Europe and over in the U.S., stock markets are closed for Good Friday. U.S. bond markets, though, are open for a half day. Investors will be closely eyeing the March jobs report due out this morning at 8:30 Eastern Time. We all know by now the future of business travel is likely to look very different than it did before the pandemic. So picture this: swanky hotel vibes, glass partitioned conference rooms, and a container that disinfects paperwork as you pass it from one person to another at a meeting. Welcome to Singapore's business travel bubble. The BBC's Saranjana Tiwari went to the city's newest facility inside a repurposed conference center and told me what it's like.
It's a facility called Connect at Changi. So travelers can get tested for COVID-19 at the airport and then they're taken straight to their hotel room. Once they get a negative result, they can move around the site freely, but they can't ever leave the location. And there are big meeting rooms with glass panels and separate ventilation systems where they can meet people without ever coming into contact. There's also speakers in those rooms so that they don't have to talk face to face. I asked a few startup founders whether it's something they might use to do business.
All those little micro body language things that are very, very important, especially when you're deal making and relationship building.
I just don't feel like a glass panel between us is really going to do that trick.
I will see a hybrid environment where I will still be spending quite a bit of time over the video conference prior to the big face-to-face.
So Saranjana, it seems like a big adjustment for everyone. Obviously, if you've got glass in between you and, you know, it's not the same as business travel once was. Do you think this will really take off in Singapore, maybe even globally?
Yeah, I mean, that is a big question. But until everyone is vaccinated and we're seeing numbers come down, how will international business go on? The point of this facility is that there's no quarantine required. So people can fly in, they can do their business, and they can go straight back. So it saves a lot of time. But a lot of people have also adjusted to a new way of doing business, you know. Some people I spoke to said that you do need to have that face-to-face meeting for things like signing multi-million dollar deals, or even for signing legal contracts, which still need a wet signature.
And you mentioned signatures. I mean, if you're not able to sit across from somebody without a piece of glass between you, how does it work with documents? They've got that all figured out too, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. There's one small sort of hatch. It's actually got a UV panel to try and get rid of any coronavirus. People can put the document in. Only when the door is closed, the other side can take the document off their hands.
They've thought of everything. And I guess one extra advantage, Saranjana, is that these can be built quickly, can't they?
That's right. The Singapore government funded this and they did build it within a matter of months. What they did was, it's a shipping container inside an exhibition centre, basically, because exhibition centres were usually used for conferences and festivals and concerts. And they're not happening as much anymore as a result of the pandemic. So they put some shipping containers in and they built these rooms and these gym pods and these meeting areas and these meeting rooms with the glass panels. And the rooms are quite small, but they are quite luxurious as well. So I can't imagine that it's any different from the business hotels that people were using around the world anyway.
It's fascinating stuff. I can't wait to visit one myself. The BBC's Saranjana Tiwari in Singapore for us. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Well, with most lockdown restrictions still in place here in England, I won't be jet setting anytime soon, but I will be hunting for some Easter candy this weekend. I'm definitely not alone in that. Retailers here say they're seeing a surge in demand for holiday goods, and it goes well beyond this country's usual preference for chocolate eggs. Online home goods store Wayfair said searches for white artificial trees surged 175% from March last year. That's as people embrace a new trend for Easter trees. Grocery giant Marks & Spencer, meanwhile, says sales of its expanded range of online Easter gifts are up 3,000%. As for me, I think I'll stick with my staple, the humble chocolate bunny. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.